Sunday, November 20th, 2011.
It's the best blog we can show. Hop on board, we'll take you where you wanna go. We're heading out to
Bill Simmons said that Devin Hester shouldn't go to the Hall of Fame because Ray Guy is not in the Hall of Fame and he's the greatest punter of all time. Pete Prisco said you can't put these returners in the Hall of Fame because it's just a specialized position and Devin Hester will fade away like everyone who's come before him. And Peter King even said there will be a great debate about Devin Hester's ability when it comes to the Hall of Fame room. And every time this discussion comes up, I hear Dante Hall's name. And I wanted to look at the numbers, because I remember Dante Hall being a dominant figure on kick returns and punt returns, but I wanted to figure out what the actual numbers were. Here are facts. Dante Hall has 12 touchdowns as a returner, but he had 9 in a 3-year span. Hester has 17 over 6 years and went 2 years without a return touchdown. Now, here is the most amazing, mind-blowing fact of all. Devin Hester returns 1 out of every 19 kicks he touches back for a touchdown. 1 out of every 19 for kick returns, that is absurd. 1 out of 19. Dante Hall for his career was 1 out of every 53. 53! Now here's a better number. During the 3-year span where Dante Hall got 9 of his 12 returns, he was 1 out of 29. So in a 3-year span where Hall had 9 touchdowns, in a 3-year span, he was still 1 out of 29 when Hester, for his whole career, including 2 scoreless years, 1 out of 19. We're not talking about a guy who is dominant at a position. We are talking about the kind of dominance at a position that comes along once in a lifetime. This is Mariano Rivera in the 9th inning, okay? This is Barry Bonds at the height of that steroids when no one wanted to throw him a pitch. This is the most remarkable thing happening in the NFL right now outside of Rodgers at the quarterback position. And to undercut it or undermine it because it returns is just silly.
Joined again by the new friend, our first friend of our podcast. Let's call him that, former Bears safety, Cameron Rivell. Cameron, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me again.
Cam, last time we talked, we were talking about the changes at safety, the cutting of Chris Harris. 2 games have been played against 2 pretty explosive passing games. How would you evaluate the secondary over these last 2 games?
I would say the secondary has done an excellent job making the transition from, you know, Chris Harris and Brandon Merriweather as the starters, or, you know, Chris Harris and Major Wright, or whatever combination of those three, and Chris Conte stepping in and Major Wright playing a little bit more of a role and Merriweather filling in, you know, from time to time. But you couldn't ask more against Detroit, an explosive offense, an offense that really hurt them. Earlier in the season on Monday night, and to really limit that passing game and that offense the way they did, create 6 turnovers, you know, 4 of them interceptions from the back end and 2 of them to the house. So you couldn't ask much more than that.
Let's get specific. There's 3 things I've noticed in the last 4 weeks. 1, is it me or is Lovie going to man coverage more in these last couple of games he's done in the last few years? It seems like he's letting his corners go out and play with these receivers.
Yeah, and that really surprised me, the game against Detroit, because I fully expected them to you know, dare Detroit to run the ball with Maurice Morris, sit back in cover two, try to get pressure with the front four with Julius Peppers and those guys and limit the big plays. But, you know, we saw all game Peanut, you know, Charles Tillman's shadow Calvin Johnson wherever he went. And that was really the key to limiting that offense. And I don't know if Lovey trusts his corners a little bit more this year, but it's really uncharacteristic for that defense to play so much man-to-man. I also think, you know, with Chris Conte in the game, he gives them a little bit more flexibility because he did a pretty good job on Pettigrew when he was lined up man-to-man against them. And to have an athletic free safety like he is that can come down and play man-to-man, kind of like Lovey used to like to do with when Daniel Manning was back there. He gave him a little more flexibility, and we're kind of seeing some of that with Chris Conte back there now.
You know, you played with Tillman, and I dedicated my Monday column to Tillman. I was just so damn impressed by what Tillman did this weekend. I've always argued, I thought Charles Tillman is the kind of player that I've been waiting for Lovey to give him the opportunity to line up with the other team's number one week in and week out, stop putting him on one side or the other, and let him go up. Do you think Tillman's the kind of guy who can, you know, listen, he's going to get beat at times, but is he the kind of who can go against the other guy's number one consistently?
Well, we saw that on Sunday. There's nobody who has shown the capabilities to play Calvin Johnson one-on-one this season. He's been beating double teams on a regular basis. And, you know, Peanut's played at a Pro Bowl level for a long time, and he really hasn't got the recognition he deserves. You know, partly I'm sure because his numbers, you know, he doesn't have 4, 5, 6, 8 picks like Charles Woodson does. You know, he doesn't have those big numbers that jump out at you. But year in and year out, he's among, you know, the best tackling cornerbacks in the league. He forces as many fumbles as you know, any defensive player around, you know, in his 9-year career. And now he's getting the chance to show how good of a cover corner he is. He's always going to be a little bit limited by, you know, the system. There's some hard rules in man-to-man defense that Lovey likes to use, but we're now seeing him, you know, allow Peanut to be a little more flexible and allow him to match up and be really physical. He's one of the most physical corners in the game. There's no question about that. And when he can get down to the line of scrimmage and get his hands on receivers, he really disrupts a lot of routes, and we saw that on Sunday.
But, you know, the other thing I've noticed, and maybe I've always thought of Lance Briggs as being the run stopper of the two linebackers and Urlacher being the guy who's better in space. But it seems to me that Lance Briggs has been doing a great job covering the middle of the field when they move Urlacher around a bit. Have you noticed that? Because I think he's been involved now in a pick in the last two games. One went right through his hands. Is Lance Briggs getting better in space, or am I just noticing it now?
Yeah, I think you're just noticing that a little bit more because Lance has always been the best in-space linebacker the Bears have had. And you see Urlacher run through the middle of the field with, you know, 4-4 receivers all the time, and that's impressive, and that's the key to this cover two system. But what people maybe fail to realize is you see a lot of times Lance Briggs one-on-one with a running back in open space, and he rarely misses those tackles. And he's very good at getting into his cover two drop and reading the quarterback and making breaks on the ball. You know, kind of like Peanut, people don't really give Lance enough credit for being such a good athlete because, you know, you see him as a system guy, you see him kind of in a Derrick Brooks mold, but he's long been, you know, one of the best linebackers in the league in open space. And now, you know, you're starting to see that a little bit more with teams. You know, when you have Julius Peppers coming off the edge, they got to get rid of the ball. And usually when that happens, you know, your outside linebackers, they have to make plays in space. And Lance has shown the ability over his career to do that. And, you know, I think people really notice that now.
You know, a couple weeks ago, I remember asking you if you thought Chris Conte was the guy. And you sort of, I think you were on the no side. You changed it a little bit here. He's proven to me in the last 2 weeks that he's better than I thought he was. And do you think that Conte may be a long-term answer at the free safety for the Bears?
Well, it's a little early to tell. Although I will say 100%, he has all the physical tools, physical characteristics to be a great free safety in Lovey's system, and he's shown that the last 2 weeks. Great breaks on the ball. He's big and physical and can make tackles in open space, and he can cover ground when he's in the deep middle of the field. Those are really the things you want to see from a free safety in that system. You know, now it's just going to be consistency. Can he play at the level he's played at over the course of the season, over the course of, you know, 2, 3, 5 seasons? That's something that we haven't seen from safeties that step into these roles. And, you know, hopefully he is the guy, because if he is, he makes that defense a lot better. You know, you have consistency in that back end, which they haven't had since really Mike Brown's been gone. You know, that allows them to do a lot more, and we've already seen that. What really impresses me is his ability to pick everything up and to really understand the safety position in that defense. He's done an excellent job of that. And then once you're comfortable in that, you see his physical tools kind of take over. And, you know, hopefully he keeps playing at this level. And so far, you know, the first 2 weeks he's shown, you know, that he can definitely be that guy. And now it's just doing it week in and week out.
Cam, last question, and we'll go off and let's go defense here for a second. You were a special teams guy primarily for the Bears, and a really good one. You had Coach Tove when you were there. I just marvel at the guy. I marvel at how our special teams, no matter who is out there, just seems the units are the best in the league year in and year out. What did Coach Dave, when you were there, what about him? Is it X's and O's? Is it motivation? What makes him such a great special teams coach?
I think, you know, number one, he does come up with great schemes week in, week out. He looks at the opponent's weaknesses and tries to exploit those, whatever they are. But more than that, I think really better than any coach I had in my career, whether a position coach, another special teams coach, a head coach, he does a better job at putting guys in the right spots to be successful, you know, better than anybody I've been around. He understands guys' strengths and weaknesses and puts them in position to use those strengths and kind of cover up those weaknesses. And, you know, when I was there, and, you know, we had an excellent group with Brendan Iambadejo and Leon Joe and Dante Wesley, guys who he understood who we were, and he kind of let us go out there and play to our abilities. And I think, you know, it's not easy to allow guys some freedom in your systems, especially when you really believe in what you're doing. But, you know, Coach Tope did that, and you see year in and year out, whether it's, you know, the same guys, a new group of guys, whoever it is, he finds ways to put these guys in place to make plays and be successful. And, you know, I think he's definitely one of the best special teams coaches in the league. And, you know, I would argue that he's one of the best assistant coaches, regardless of position in the league, because he has that ability to figure out where to put guys to allow them to make plays.
You think he'll be a good head coach?
I think so. I mean, he commands attention and he commands respect. And like I said, he understands personnel. He understands how to put that personnel in position to be successful. And as a head coach, you know, that's one of the main things you need to do is figure out your personnel, who you have and what you can do with them. You know, we've seen Lovie has done a great job throughout this season as kind of transforming that offense, you know, into more a balanced 50-50 type of attack, you know, get Matt Forte the ball more and more. And he's a great head coach, and he has the ability to do that. And I think Coach Tope will be similar to that. He'll be able to do that just as well.
Great stuff again from Cameron Worrell. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
It's all the lass from Staffordshire, as you may understand, outlawed by king and country into some foreign land. She dressed herself in sailor's clothes, or so it does appear, and she hired with her captain to serve him for a year.
Jonathan has pulled a clear 3 games ahead of Chris and myself. I'm mired in a bit of a slump, my first slump of the year. 1-2 again this week for me, 1-2 for Chris, and a 2-1 for John. The commenters had a good week. 3 or 4 of you had perfect weeks. Standings are listed below. Remember, 3 more weeks in the regular season. We're going to have 3 more weeks in the regular season, and then we're going to have a playoff format over the last month of the year to determine who wins the photograph from Fisheye Vertigo, the birdhouse from Backyard Bird Company, and some delicious treats from Crispy Creations. But for now, we enter the 11th week. 11th week, as Mike Francesa would say, in the league where they play for pay.
Picking and we're picking all night. We're picking all night, and we're gonna pick it all night, gonna pick it all night, gonna pick it all night, all right. We're gonna make the picks. So John, Jeff, and Chris gonna make the picks. Sometimes the boy's going 3-0. Sometimes the boy's going to dose and do. Most of the time we'll be mediocre.
Here comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right.
Here comes the sun, baby. I'm moving back. I'm moving back to where I belong, top of the table. But I need a 2-1 to just get myself out of the 1-2 rut. 2-1 will get it done. First pick, sticking with them, loving them recently. Take the Bears, -3.5 against the Chargers. I am going to say this will not be the letdown game. I think the Bears are better than the Chargers. I think the home field advantage is really substantial in this game. And I think the Chargers are a team you can put to sleep fairly quickly. I'll take the Bears, -3.5. I've been very lucky with picking the Bears this year. I'm going to stick with it. And I'm going to go against what I've been doing. I've been picking the Monday night or the Sunday night game to give myself a reason to watch it and to care. Forget about that. That's out now. I got to win some games. Give me the Seahawks, +2 in St. Louis. I watched about 10 seconds of St. Louis-Cleveland last week, and Cleveland should have won the game. St. Louis is terrible, and I don't think the Seahawks are as bad as people think they are. I think this line doesn't make any sense. I think the Seahawks are a substantially better team than the Rams, and I think they're going to win this game. I think they're going to win this game 17-10, something like that. I think Tavares will play just good enough. Marshawn Lynch has been a bit beastly again of late. I just think they're better. Their front four should manhandle the Rams' offensive line. The Rams are a dead team. Give me the Seahawks, +2. And the last pick, I'll take the Jags, -1 in Cleveland. I don't know how the Browns will score a point in this game. I can't conceive of the Browns scoring a point in this game. The Jags defense is having a very good year. They're playing everybody tough. They're shutting everybody down. They shut down the Ravens on that terrible Monday night game. I have a feeling the Jags are gonna pitch something close to a shutout here. It'll be boring. It won't be watchable. You'll hate the game. But I'm taking the Jags, -1. So it's Jags, -1, Seahawks, +2, Bears, -3.5. Eat them with your milk.
You know what? It's been a good year. I probably would close the books because I think this week is going to be a really bad week for me. I'm predicting 0-3. I like the Raiders, the Falcons, and the Jaguars for no particular reason other than those are the lesser of all the evils that are out there in the lines this week. Have a great day.
Chris's picks.
Okay, it's week 11 of the NFL season. Our little brother Nate just fell asleep, so in his honor, here are our picks. Woo, woo, woo. You know it. We went 1-2 last week. 1-2? Can someone please fire the Ravens offensive coordinator? He sucks. How does Rice only rush the ball 5 times in a game and only touch the ball 10 times? And against the crappy Seahawks? I wouldn't let Joe Flacco throw up my garbage, let alone throw a football 50 times in a game. He stinks. Cam Newton and their offensive line did not show up. They sucked. And if it's not for the Colts doing their usual craptastic performance, it would have been a horrible week because they just played suck, 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 and he suck. Yeah. But we tied Uncle Jeff at 1-2, and we are still tied for second place. Uncle John, we're coming for you.
Pick number 1. Hey, Joe, Raiders -2 over the Vikings. Michael Bliss is a starter on about 25 other teams. Carson Palmer seems to be rejuvenated with young receivers. Denarius Moore is Palmer's favorite target. The Vikings don't look like they can stop anyone, and the Raiders have a good run and pass combination. The Raiders are playing for the division. If they can't slow up AP, they will win. Take the Raiders minus -2.
Pick number 2. Hey, it's Lucas. Patriots minus 14.5 over the Chiefs. I know this is a lot of points to give up, but if they can score 30-plus points against my J-E-T-S, Jets, 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 this is going to be a bloodbath. Brady to Welker. Nothing else to say. Huge day for both. Tyler Palgo? Who? He is going to be the QB for the Chiefs. Really? 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 Take the Pats minus 14.5. And don't even think twice.
Pick number 3. Hey, Joe, and I can't believe we are going to the Jaguars well for a second straight week. But take the Jags minus 1 against the Browns. The Jags' defense is pretty good all of a sudden. Blaine Gabbert isn't losing games, and MJD should run like crazy against the Browns. The Browns are down to their third string running back. Chris, I want a banana. Chris, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Chris, a banana. See, I can't even say it. Now you shouldn't even learn it. Jags minus 1.
Oh my gosh! Look who just woke up! Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I introduce to you Nate the Great! Oh, never mind. He's still asleep. So here are our picks. Raiders minus 2, Jags minus 1, and Pats minus 14.5.
The kids got discovered!
You guys were terrible last week. You're embarrassing. You're both grounded for a week. No TV, video games, or nothing. You better do better this week.
Okay, bye!
Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi.
There's the picks for week 11. I got the Seahawks, Bears, and Jags. John's got the Raiders, Falcons, and Jags. Chris has got the Raiders, Patriots, and Jags. All three of us have the Jags. So take all of your money right now, call your bookie or any slimy Italian in your neighborhood, and bet the Browns. The Reverend's rant is not appropriate for children. Neither, of course, is Jerry Sandusky. I have pork chop.
I was sitting at the bar on Sunday, sick as a dog and irritated about work. But man, all that shit just falls away when you watch Dev return punts, doesn't it? Even the ones he doesn't score on. It's just impossible to watch that man return kicks without getting a big sheen grin on your face. And so the thought occurred to me as I was watching Dev almost take in a second consecutive return was fuck, I owe Jerry for my first smile in about a week. Now, I've been down on J.A. for a long time. He's been the subject of plenty of fucking vitriol on podcasts past. But I confess I did say several silent thank yous to the man for providing me the joy of watching Hester return kicks. So I was going to come in here and bitch about how much it drives me fucking crazy to have to give him credit for anything, and then I get a text from Jeff telling me he's about to post a column in praise of the man. So now I'm fucking pissed at Jeff. I hate Jerry. I'd like nothing better than to tee off on an article like that and call Jeff a fucking moron. No better than certain Chicago writers who vacillate on Jerry's legacy depending on the week. And any other week I would. But the fucker had to go and pull this right after I spent 3 hours Sunday acknowledging Jerry's successes. Still, Jeff tries a lot of sleight-of-hand shit in his fucking column. My fucking favorite is the way he casually overlooks Jerry's history in the first round. To say, yes, Angelo has struggled with his first-round selections, but he's found Forte in the second round, is kind of like saying, well, yes, Sandusky has struggled to control his penis around little boys, but hey, he coaches the hell out of his linebackers. So, I was tempted to go through and point out the rest of the things Jeff tries to gloss over in his column, or at least that particular graph, especially Jeff ignoring the fact that the impending demise of the 2006 offensive line was so obvious that J.A.'s failure to address it is one of his biggest indictments, but then I decided there was no need.
Jeff was so drunk on the Kool-Aid when he wrote this that he actually names He Who Shall Not Be Named. And if Arch Deluxe's real name appears on the site outside of the comments section, then we all know Jeff has taken leave of his senses, and he needs our sympathy, not our abuse. And also probably to be cut off for the night. But while I come to bury Jerry, not to praise him, I am forced to acknowledge, in this public space, that he is responsible for me being able to watch the greatest kick returner in the history of the game play for my team. And that is just an incredible privilege, and I won't forget to put that on the plus side of the scale when I'm weighing those successes against the list of failures that includes Arch Deluxe, Cedric Benson, and the ghost of Gaines fucking Adams. But you know what? Those ghosts are pretty fucking heavy, so it might take a trophy to tip the balance.
It's not that I don't acknowledge Jerry's mistakes, and by the way, I go out of my way in that column 3 separate times to say I don't think Jerry Angelo is a great general manager. It's not that I don't acknowledge his mistakes, but why would I be worried today about Adam Archuleta when we've got good safety play? Why would I be worried today about Gaines Adams when we've got Julius Peppers? Why would I be worried today about the Todd Collinses and the Jonathan Quinns when we've got two good quarterbacks? The process getting here may have been strange and at times ill-advised, but where we've arrived at here last season and this season is a really good roster that Jerry Angelo put together. Whether you want to acknowledge that he's done that or not, he did it. We have got this roster because of his actions. And this argument you guys made in the comments section, this argument that Jay Cutler and Julius Peppers were no-brainers, is ludicrous. If they were no-brainers, why did one general manager get both of them? A premier quarterback and the premier 4-3 end rusher. Why did one GM get both? If you don't applaud those two decisions, then you're just not being fair. The guy's tenure may be marred with bad decisions throughout, but it is also highlighted by him adding elite players at important positions. Fact. That's the show. Don't drink and drive.